Basketball Manitoba podcast, we have Pierre Dubreuil. He began playing basketball at the age of 15 in his home country of France. After playing for just 2 years, he started coaching and refereeing, finding himself more drawn to that side of the game. For 11 years, he coached and refereed at the pre-national level before moving to Canada in 2018. That summer, he took over the men's basketball program at Providence University. Under his leadership, the Pilots clinched their first MCAC championship in 19 years and repeated as champions this year with an undefeated season in the MCAC. Pierre has led multiple basketball camps in both Canada and France and has mentored several coaches to develop the game of basketball in his community. He was named 2022-2023 MCA Coach of the Year and serves as the head coach of the 15U Manitoba Provincial Team. Pierre, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Darcy. It's a pleasure to be there.
Absolutely. So I don't know you, Pierre. We were talking a little bit offline. I've interviewed a few people. Again, this community is small, as you know, The basketball community in Manitoba. And I've only, interviewed a few people who I didn't know anything about. Like I didn't know anything about them. I hadn't met them before. And I think you're maybe one of two, I believe. Why the heck are you in Manitoba? Tell us what brought you here. Let's go from that.
Yeah, now, I'm not going to lie. I was hoping for you to pull up a story about me somehow. You know, I remember you from, like, I'm a bit disappointed, but.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm playing. I born and raised in France and came to basketball pretty late in my life at 15 years old. Mm-hmm. I guess the story could be long about basketball, but I'm going to skip ahead and just go to like the coming to Manitoba.
Yeah. Canada. Let's hear that. Yeah. I want to know exactly why you're here.
Yeah. I mean, it's a wide story. I was working in management for a big headphone and speaker company, Bose. Just living a good life in France and on the side, coaching basketball, reffing basketball and playing a little bit, as I was able. And, like sometimes in your life, you go through moments where you feel like you're not on the right path and you're not really accomplishing what you need to do. For me, it was part of a faith journey, being a Christian and feeling like I needed to do some changes in my life. And so I kind of like do what a Christian do, which is praying and trying to listen to what you're supposed to do. And I kind of saw this weird, like, word Canada in my closed eyes. I saw the letters and I was like, what the heck is that? Like, I mean, I know where the country is, but I had very little drawn to going anywhere outside of France. Mm-hmm. And just to add a little bit to the story, at the time I had a job offer 3 hours away from home. And I was like, this is too far. Like I am going 3 hours away from my family. I don't think I can do it. And then at the same time, I received this weird sense of like, you got to go in Canada. And I'm like, this is wild. And so I'm kind of like on a journey of doing like a leap of faith. I'm like, all right, let's ask for a work permit. Like, I have no idea like where you ask for a work permit. Like, I don't know anything about this. I get a work permit and I'm like, all right, well, it's one step down, a few more to go. And as I'm reflecting on what I want to do with my life, I realized that basketball is my happy place. More particularly coaching basketball and having the ability to impact others and pour myself in youth and in young adults and just, teach them basketball and through basketball life. I was like, man, I want to do that. And I heard the testimony of a coach in a camp where I was at, who kind of did the same thing. He was playing soccer, wanted to play pro, and his path led him to play in a university in Boston. And he got injured the day where he was going to get his pro contract.
Wow.
Like season ending injury, but more like career ending injury. Mm-hmm. And he's like, this is it. Like God is taking away soccer from me and kind of like defeated. And he got an occasion to start coaching soccer, and he told us how he was coaching in the US and got this occasion. He was in Christian University like me and has this occasion to like mix his sports and his faith. And I'm listening to him and I'm like, this is what I need to do. And kind of like, in a naive sense, I'm like, this is gonna be easy. I'm gonna just like show up in Canada and I'm gonna find a job. And that's what I did. I lined up like 4 weeks or 5 weeks of sports camps with Athletes in Action. Sold everything in France, gave the key for my apartment, and moved to Canada with 5 weeks of sports camps in the summer 2018. And I had applied to 18 different positions in Canada, only basketball. And the very last one I applied to was Providence. And I mean, everybody knows that story here, so I can say it like I felt it. But I look at the job offer and I'm like, this is not attractive. Like, this is a half-time job in the middle of nowhere. I had never heard of Manitoba. The only thing I knew was Quebec. Like, I was like, I'm gonna go to Montreal. But really soon I had to realize that I would need to speak English if I wanted to make a living in basketball. And so I started looking at different provinces, right? I even like went to Toronto to visit the city and kind of get a sense of the vibe. And I was like, yeah, that's the kind of city I can live in, like a big city like in France. And so I applied to Providence as my last job before moving to Canada, moved to Canada, and they're the only one who called me back. And they were like a little bit dragging their feet, because they're like, there's this French guy from like, we don't know him, we can't compare his like experience in basketball to anything we know. And I remember that being like a hurdle for them, like being like, hey, can you send us a game? And I was like, we don't record games, like we don't do that, like it's not the same. And so having to explain my level and my knowledge, and I mean, they gambled and took a chance on me, and the rest is history. I ended up in Audubon, Manitoba, in the middle of nowhere, and now I'm head coaching a college program full time. So that's amazing.
It is pretty crazy. You didn't know about Manitoba, never mind Otterburn. There's people in Winnipeg that no idea where Otterburn is. They've
I
never heard
know.
of it. And you probably know I've interviewed, I think maybe you're maybe the sixth person or fifth or sixth person from Providence. And I always ask that same question of them because typically they're people from Manitoba and they're like, I'd never heard of this place for the most part. Now, Joel, I think, is the exception because he had some roots to it, but everyone else was like, no idea. I didn't know what this place was. And so now you're out there. Do you live in Otterburn?
I do,
Are you
yeah.
li-
I moved on campus last September. I was in Steinbach for my first 4 years, and to cut the cost and be closer to the gym, I moved on campus last September.
And so I got to ask, your first winter here.
I loved it.
Come
So
Really?
here's the thing. I call from Brittany in France, so it's
Mm-hmm.
the little piece of land on the left close to Normandy, and it's like BC weather. Like we are all like we're surrounded north and south by the sea. I mean, by the oceans. Same thing on the west side, and so you get rain. It gets into your bones. Like it's really humid. It's not enjoyable at all. And so I came here expecting like kind of the same thing plus the snow, and I realized it was really dry, like really dry winter and everything. And I don't think I'm lying when I say I love it. Obviously, you discover that you have to cover your face and your fingers. And there's a few times where I gambled with how much I needed to wear, and really, really regretted it. But no, I kind of love it. I mean, it's sunny, white everywhere, it's peaceful. Like I really love it.
Nice. And then I guess the summers, I mean, the summers are probably, they're fine, right? Compared to back home.
It's kind of the same. I mean, I discover that mosquitoes here are extremely aggressive, but other than that, it's fine.
Then that is a great way to put it. They're numerous and aggressive for sure. What I was gonna ask you is, what do you think about like small town? Like, I mean, you were living in Steinbach before. That's not a big place.
No.
Again, I'm not sure how big was the city you lived in back in France compared to obviously not Otterburn, but Steinbach. I mean, you're living in a much different community. What's been your experience in so far as far as being a new person?
I always compare my city in France to Winnipeg. We were a lot smaller. I think close to 300,000 people in the city, but we were a lot more developed, like two lines of underground subway, like the public transportation is like out of this world. All downtown is for pedestrian, so you can walk, there's no car. Like it's very different. The infrastructures are very different. So it felt more advanced and modern in France. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you're right. Like when I came to Steinbach already, I was like, oh boy, like this is small. Mm-hmm. And now in Otterburn, it's like I opened my window in the morning and there's deer on my backyard. I'm like, this is very different. I like it. I mean, it has its challenges. Coming from a different country at later on in life and so not going through college or high school and making friends there, I find it challenging to enter friend circles and just meet people. But it's been good. I'm discovering that I actually enjoy being in the peacefulness of the countryside. Like it's nice. Weird. Every time I drive to Winnipeg now, I'm like, this is a lot of people.
Yeah. No, for sure. That's interesting. Yeah. It's always interesting to hear, people's, experience coming to a new place, new country. It's funny you mentioned that's like probably one of the things I enjoy the most about most European cities is, again, they can be 300,000 people, 200,000 people. There's a vibrant center. They always prioritize the transit, and you're not going to find that here in Winnipeg. That's for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Both those things are not a priority at all. I always appreciate that about, you go to some cities in Europe and again, sounds like your city is like that. If you were just dumped in the core, you have no idea how many people are in that city. Like you just like, oh, this is pretty busy here. I have no idea. Right. And so it's quite the change for sure. All right. So thanks for telling that whole story. And I thought it was important for me because I want to know how the heck you got here and why you're here. So this is important, but now I kind of want to get back into your story and go back a little bit and ask you about, what are your first memories of basketball? I mean, when in the introduction, I said to you, I read that, you played later, you started playing later, and then you shifted very quickly to refereeing and coaching. So what are some of your earliest memories of basketball? How did you actually get started in the game at all?
Well, if I tell you that now, I'm going to give you my funny story that you often ask at the end.
I think you got to do it now. I mean, if the podcast is starting off with a funny story, then it's a good podcast.
Right? All right. So I came to basketball at 15 years old because I was really into rap and gangsta style. That's going to make my players laugh. So I had no idea who was who in basketball. Like we have little access to the NBA, or we had little access to the NBA. Yeah. So we knew the players, but I wasn't watching any games. And so I bought a LeBron James jersey from the Cavaliers and a Stevie Francis from the Manitoba Magic. Not the club team. And I was wearing them with my oversized shirts and everything. And I was kind of known as the basketball guy in my local community, even though I could not shoot a basket for saving my life. And so I went to high school and some of my new friends are like, hey, you playing basketball? And I'm like, not really, but I like the vibe of it. And I was a big dude at my age already in high school. So they're like, hey, big dude, come play with us. Yeah. And so they invited me to come. And you know, when you're young, you think that's, especially when you're getting invited, right? You feel like you're a big deal. And so I went there thinking I was gonna blow their mind away with my imaginary skills. And they got me into it. So I was horrible, but they got me into it. And that's how I started playing basketball. Like prior to that, I had played basketball, just in with some friends. You find a hoop and a ball and you shoot it, right? Yeah. I was a soccer guy. I was a tennis player. I was a track athlete. I mean, a track, not athlete, just a track. I was hanging out on the track. And I also played a German sport, handball.
Okay, yeah.
And so that's how I grew up, like playing these sports. And so not at all basketball. Like basketball wasn't part of my story yet before that. Nobody plays basketball in my family. Like I have no memories of basketball as a kid. It's just like this, you wear the clothes and someone tells you, hey, come come play. And I'm like, all right, sure. And I kind of loved it.
Yeah. So you just fell in love with it after that.
Yeah. Fell in love, joined their club, and starting playing with them at U15. Mm-hmm. And they made me play as a post because again I was a bit of a bigger kid, and that's where the story derailed a little bit because my coach was more interested in making us practice with the female team to try to make couples than actually teaching us basketball. And so every single practice was just like, you know, we're hanging out with the girls and playing ball and we're not learning anything. But arrive game time, I'm in charge of taking rebounds on one hand to the other of the court, and that's pretty much it. And not allowed to shoot, not allowed to do anything, like not allowed really? To learn the game, just allowed to like grab rebounds. And again, I mean, I don't want to insist on that part because it doesn't paint me really a good picture, but I was a bigger kid. So like, it was hard to run from one end to another. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I started being, you know, I had this very strange drive to get better. I mm-hmm. wanted to know the game. So I started like watching YouTube. I was watching D-Wade play and I was like, all right, like I'm going to go on the court and do like 1,000 times what D-Wade is doing. And I was very disciplined with that. Like playing outside, because we don't really have access to like a gym. You can't mm-hmm. just show up to a gym and play. So I was going outside and learning, but as soon as I go back to my club, my coach is like, nope, just grab the rebounds. And so mm-hmm. I did it for 1 year, 2 years, and felt like I wanted more from the game, and felt like, you know, I was done competing. I mean, it's sad, right? Like when a kid at 16 years old is already like, yeah, I'm done competing. Like it's not a fun game. And so I started reffing because I wanted to stay connecting to the game. And so I started reffing and I was like, all right, I kind of like that. Like it gave me like a chance to exercise and to learn the rules and just see a different aspect of the game. Mm-hmm. And then through different events, I started coaching as well, and that's kind of like where I headed from there, and kind of like left the playing side and kind of went with that. So I started reffing and coaching at 17 years old, and I kind of tell people I'm not, you know, I didn't play, and then once I'm washed out, I'm like, all right, what's next? Like, oh, yes. Let's ref or let's coach. I was like at 17 years old, I dedicated my time and passion to be a coach and a referee. And so I've learned from a long time now how to coach. I've learned how to talk to players. I've learned how to develop their like skills and everything, as opposed mm-hmm. to, you know, doing it as a player and then kind of like doing the same thing that I've done. I did it in a different way than a lot of coaches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a different route. I'm curious, do you think that you would have continued to play if you had a different coach?
It's possible. I mean, there's really no way to know. I use my story to tell people about regrets and how you never regret working hard and doing your best. And if you don't get the results, at least you know you tried your best, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I always say I regret never trying my best at being a good player, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I felt like I tried, but like obviously without guidance, I was limited. And so I regret not knowing, but it's not the kind of regret that, you know, keep me up at night, because I love what I'm doing. I love being a coach. And so, but yeah, I would have loved to know. I think I was, I mean, down the end of my years playing like in men's league and everything, I was becoming a pretty like sharp shooter. Mm-hmm. And so I would have loved to see like, you know, where what I could have done being in shape and basketball shape and all the good things. But mm-hmm. I took a different mm-hmm. path and I love the path that I took. So
yeah, absolutely. I like to reflect on those moments, because those are kind of like those fork in the road moments. But I think like there's a different word maybe, or a different way to describe it than regret, is more you're curious of what could have been, not necessarily that you would change it, but you're like, oh yeah, like, I do love the game and obviously it would have been cool to play it. I'm wondering what type of player I could have been. Yeah. But the converse of that is that you probably wouldn't be coaching right now if you didn't make the transition early, right? And so that's the thing, like with life, it's just, it is what it is, but it's still interesting to ponder. Could have been, you know.
Yeah, and you know, the different opportunities that you size and different, yeah, like as you say, you can take different paths. I mean, for me, I was on track to try to be a professional ref. And so I was passionate with reffing, and I grew up there's like three different levels in France: departmental, which is like kind of like the lowest level, then there's the regional level, and then what we call the national level, which is not the French national team, but there's like the professional teams, and then different levels in national. Then you go to region, and you have the pre-national level, which is where I stopped. And the pre-national level, like the best way I can put it is like top youth sports level, like mm-hmm. like in terms of like mm-hmm. the quality of the athletes. Mm-hmm. And so I went really fast to the pre-national level and was a lead ref at that level. And I was like, all right, I'm gonna, like, this is it. Like I found my career path. I'm gonna be a professional ref. But an opportunity offered itself to change club and start coaching in a different club. And like the coach, his name was Cyril Germain. He kind of convinced me. He was like, no, you should come to our club. Like we could pay for you coaching training. We could develop you. And I was like, all right, let's try. Right. And, mm-hmm. and in that club, they had a professional women's team, like playing at the second professional level in France. Mm-hmm. And so I was surrounded by professional coaches. Cyril was one of them. And the other one, her name was Fred Prudhomme. And she happens to be the former captain of the French national team. And okay. so, you know, lots of experience as a player. She was an amazing player development coach. Like, even though she was coaching the professional team, she was also developing young kids. And so I was helping her. And I had the chance in that club, my first year, to be an assistant coach at the national level. And wow. and then you know, just one decision. If I had stayed in a different club, it was a men's club, a lot more oriented with like towards reffing for me, and so I would probably have stayed on the reffing like side of things. And switching to this different club that had like all these professional coaches willing to develop me, led me to kind of like, you know, balance both. I wouldn't say at that time I went like all in coaching and no reffing. I kept reffing, mm-hmm. but slowly coaching like took over because I developed myself, and then some stuff happened with the reffing that made it more difficult to advance. Mm-hmm. And then I fully focused on coaching.
Interesting. So then how long were you coaching for? So you, when we opened up the podcast, you shared a story of, you know, how you came here and you had this moment, you prayed and you got this, all that stuff, which I love, by the way. And now you're here. So somewhere along the line, again, you're talking about how you started taking reffing less seriously as far as a path, and you started taking coaching more seriously. But yeah. How long between that, the point when you started working with this club and you're like, okay, you know what, I really am into this coaching, to the moment that you were talking about where you're sitting there in France and you're like, something's calling me. What are we talking about there from time frame?
About 11 years.
Okay, so this was you put in a lot of work.
Yeah.
Before yeah. then.
Yeah, I had a okay. few years where I stopped in between, because if you were making the math, that would not like adds up with my age. Mm-hmm. But there's a few years where I stopped, like especially when I started working, you know, as a young adult, like I had less time. But about 11 years total of coaching. And then moving to Canada and coaching for 5 years now. So yeah, mm-hmm. 16, mm-hmm. I have about 16 years. It's
okay.
Again, we're not keeping tracks like a lot in France of like stats and everything. So it's hard to know, like even for me to remember how many teams I coached, but it was about 11 years before okay. moving here. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And so one thing I like to ask all my guests here is, again, you know, you obviously had mentioned, I believe in English, you'd just say Cyril. I think that's how you would say the name of the person.
Yep.
Who, right.
Yeah.
You know, say, hey, come here. So one thing that I like to ask is about mentors, right?
Yes. And
people who have kind of guided, you know, in down your path, or at least supported you down that path. So, yeah. you know, want to ask you about who are some of those people that, you know, again, 11 years is a long time.
Yep.
To be doing something now, and now beyond that, like you're still going. So I'm sure you still have some mentors, some people that you confide in. The big thing that I'm very curious about is, obviously early on, yes, tell us about that. But when you now are telling whoever it is, you're like, hey, I'm leaving, I'm out of here, and I'm going to Canada. Maybe you had someone as well who was advising you during that time. So maybe just, you know, again, that's I'm not asking a direct question, but tell yeah. us a little bit about your mentors and how they've affected your life in transitioning and in basketball.
For sure. Well, Cyril and Frederick was definitely the one that mentored me when I was a young coach. They were very opposed in terms of coaching style. And you know, you don't realize that when you're in the moment, like you kind of pick your favorites, but the fact that both of them were mentoring me today has led me to like have a better knowledge and better tools in my hands. Mm-hmm. So he was a lot on the intensity side. His thing was like courir, running, and he was yelling it like every single time, like during games, like run. And so he was super intense, always red, you know, like not in a disrespectful way, but very intense, very on top of like the technique, strategy and everything. And so I took his energy, I took his passion and how he talks, you know, about the game. And from her, she was a gentle soul. She was the most knowledgeable coach I knew, but she was a gentle soul. She cared so deeply about the players, so deeply about their lives, and trying to help them, like just be the best version of themselves. And I took that from her, this need to develop relationships and invest in relationships. And even though you have some like misses along the ways, like it relationships don't work every time. I took that from her. And so they kind of both guided me and trusted me, like they trusted me with like good level teams and being able to like coach that level. And when it was too high for me, I was an assistant coach, but still they trusted me, you know, to work with high level athletes. I wouldn't be able to tell you names because it was a long time ago, but when I was about 18 or 19 years old, I was assistant coach, not assistant coach, I was assisting practice time with a U17 high performance girls team. And I would say at least three of these players are playing in professional like teams in Europe right now. And once in a while, when I would watch like games in Europe, and I was like, wait, like, I think I know her, like every her. She's still playing. And so that's kind of cool, right? I had the occasion to touch that. Moving to Canada was already a bit removed from my club. I had changed club at that time, and I was in a different club, a lot less like performance based, more like developing youth and everything. I would say they were not my mentor, but I had like one guy was actually from Montreal, and so he kind of like gave me some pointers, and my coach junior played university in the state, so he had a good understanding on how things work, and so they kind of gave me some pointers on that as well. And today I unfortunately don't have I'm up for grab. I don't have a direct mentor, but I'm you know, every time I can, I go to Kirby Sheps and Mike Rambo, and just like I sat down with Mike. I'm very thankful for that, like a few days ago, and just like, you know, like try to grab as much knowledge and wisdom from these guys and guys like Steve Tackey, who's my assistant coach for the provincial team, and even Joel, like, has been there for a long time, my coworker from the women's side. And so I try to be open to everybody. It doesn't matter what level you coach, there's always something you can learn. I'm into like listening to professional coaches or college like coaches, Coach K, John Shire. I'm a big Duke guy. Sorry. Sorry for the people who are gonna listen and don't like Duke. I'm a big Duke guy. And like Steve Kerr, I enjoyed his biography. So I'm trying to learn from anybody who can share something.
Interesting. So it's a great kind of a segue, because you set it up. You know, I'm always curious about you know, you'd mentioned your mentors had different styles. And you talked about community building and connection with people. You've now brought up Steve Kerr and other people. So I'm curious, just like the one thing that I've really come to notice, should understand when it comes with anything, but I think this is even more important when it comes to team sport, is that really, yes, we want these outcomes on the court, and yes, we want to win these games. Yes, we want to develop these skills, you know, on an individual level as a team. But the one thing that is consistent, and I know this sounds crazy to say because it's so obvious, is that you're actually in the game of people, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's really what we're doing. And the people that are able to get the most out of other people tend to have the most success in, regardless of what it is. So I'm actually, you know, curious, what are some of your philosophies, strategies, you know, even like I use the word tricks, because sometimes it's as simple as like, you know, you trick your players into thinking something, but realistically, what are some of those things that you prioritize to build culture within your programs, and maybe just, you know, one-on-one with players as well, some of those values?
Yeah, well, first of all, you're absolutely right. Coaching is relationship-based, or at least should be, in my opinion. And you only get the best out of people if they trust you, and if you trust them, and if you have this relationship with them, right? Mm-hmm. So even if you were to be only focused on winning, you will still need to build this relationship, because otherwise players don't give you the best, right?
Yes.
And so no matter how you approach coaching, like if you're high performance or not, you still need to build the relationships. It does take time, and I've learned the wrong way, unfortunately. That's you know, you need to nurture a relationship, and mm-hmm. you can burn bridges like very easily when you say the wrong thing. So and I mean, for me, coming to Canada, different culture, different ways to do things. I've never been in one place coaching one team, recruiting my players and developing them. That was very new for me. So, but by no means, I think I have the perfect answers to any of the questions you ask, because I'm still learning. Mm-hmm. So from Coach K, every time I'm listening to him or listening to interviews, I took on that he was very good at building relationships, which sounds kind of crazy, because you also read so many stories of him, like just like yelling at your face and like bringing you to the gym at 4 a.m. after a road trip to like make you run for hours, and you're like, all right, that's interesting how he combines both. But you know, the famous, like, I mean, the Redeem Team documentary on Netflix talks about it a little bit, but how he approaches like values instead of rules. And so I've experimented both, because when I came here, one of the things that I was recruited for by Providence was to turn around the program from kind of a bad reputation program. And it's not saying anything about the players. Like at that time, I mean, there's unbelievable guys like Cash Blanca, Christopher Dick, Graham Bogner, like who played at Providence, like, you know, the years before. And they were unbelievable human beings and unbelievable players, but they were also a little bit of some bad apples and guys who, you know, didn't have the greatest reputation. And so, but my athletic director, Scott Masterson, really wanted me to turn around the program in that aspect. Mm-hmm. And so my first reaction based on my background was like, let's put some rules, you know? And so my first year, I made the player sign a contract. You shall not do that. You will do that. you will not do that. Mm-hmm, and players respected it. Like they embraced it. And even even if some of them were, you know, not on board with everything, they respected it, and I appreciated that. And to do a side note about the trick, I sometimes use rules just to teach that in life, you don't always do what you want. Like I had one rule that I remember players always like being against, and it was a silly rule, but they didn't like it. And I was like, honestly, I actually don't really care that much, but because it triggers you in like not liking it, I'm just going to keep it. So you learn that, you know, sometimes you just have to do what I'm asking. And so I had this set of rules, and I went into year two kind of the same way, but then I studied. You know, when you open yourself to the English language, you also open yourself to a lot of resources. And so I as I learned English, and as I got better at learning English and listening to English, I was able to listen to so many coaches and so many like wisdom out there that you can listen. There's a lot of crap as well, but if you select what you listen to, there's some great stuff. And so I started reflecting on values and principles, and I consider myself a man of value. You know, I try to approach life with honesty and communication and respect and this kind of value. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, how does it look like to either way sell your values to your players or get them to give you their values and build your culture like that? So I'm in year two. I've experimented that. So last year after COVID, we didn't have any rules. It was more principles. Hey, let's agree to conduct ourselves in this way or this way. But this year, I wanted to take it to the next level. So I found I found that something that I tried with my team and I thought was pretty good. So what we did is we sat down in a classroom early in training camp, and I gave them a list of values that they could like or dislike. And so we did a draft. So individually, they selected I don't remember exactly. I think there was 16 values on both sides, and you kind of match them up in a March Madness bracket, and they advance to the final four.
And then
you keep your four values.
Okay.
And then you meet with three or four teammates, and everybody takes his four values and re-implement them into the 16, and you kind of like go again and like match them up until you all agree on four values. And then we do it as a group. And so everybody did it. And at the end, we had this big debate where everybody was like, well, that value kind of sounds like this one. And I think this one is better because of that. But I think this one. And we kind of like, you know, talked about that and came out with our values for the year. And it didn't exactly look like what I wanted at first. But I was like, you know what? If it comes from them, then they're going to carry it and it's going to be better. And so, it was very interesting to go with that. That's kind of how I try to build my culture, like building a relationship, like having players one-on-one, like learning from them and learning what they like and kind of like building from there, but also having them sharing their values and their standard and the things we want to carry ourselves with. It takes a lot of time though. Like it's not, you know, an instant process. And you do it once and then you kind of like done doing it. Like,
of course.
Like I don't even know next year, you know, if I'm going to do the same values or if we're going to change, if I want to do something different. So we'll see, but just for reference, the values were, accountability, communication, discipline, and hustle.
Okay. Yeah.
Leading towards excellence.
Okay.
So that's the thing that didn't went as planned. Like we ended up with five values that we were really fighting like for. And we realized by searching the definition of excellence that should be an end goal and not just a value. So we put excellence on top and then accountability, communication, discipline, and hustle, and kind of like going towards excellence.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, we had a successful season in results, but also at the end of the season, most of my players told me that this was the best year in terms of team chemistry and camaraderie, like they had a blast. And so whether it came from the values or not doesn't exactly matter, like the end results matter, right? And so it's a mix of everything that you do that leads to an end result that is awesome.
I think that's you know what I'm curious about is you had said, hey, this is the first time I did this, it was successful, the players bought in. So was it the actual just the exercise, like, again, values aside, like they're always going to pick good values. No, they're not going to be a list of poor values, right? So that aside, I mean, the exercise itself may be the actual practice that helps to define your culture, right? Is that is literally accountability, right? You're telling them, hey, like, you're gonna pick this, like, you're gonna be the one who's accountable for choosing our values. And so is this something that, like, in the back of your mind, you know, have you made a decision on if you're gonna do it again this coming year or not?
The part I'm not sure is, do I use the same values and kind of like go with that and be like, hey, this is the program values, like, let's talk about it, what do you think, like, goes into this value, or if we redo the exercise, like the exercise, sorry, from the start. But we tried, I mean, like, to piggyback right on what you just said, we tried, it was on every single sheet that we gave them, like scouting reports, plays, practice sheet. They're on the top, you had the four values and excellence on the top. And me and my coaching staff, when we talk, we try to really talk about the values. Hey, what are we missing right now? Like, are we good at communication right now? Are we hustling in everything we do? Do we have discipline? Like, are we accountable to our actions? And so we try to loop back, and sometimes it's very subtle and sometimes it's like very explicit in your face, hey, our values are supposed to be discipline. We're not disciplined right now, right?
And so we
went with that. I might ask my captains, should we keep the same values, should we like change them? But I think the exercise in itself was very good for us. And but then it comes down to, like, you know, if you do the exercise at the beginning of the season, then kind of like left it on the side and go on with the season. Like, yes. It doesn't matter. Like, you have to, like, bring it back on the front page every single day and talk about it. And if you don't talk about it, carry yourself with it, right?
Yes.
And I think these four values really reflected well on what we did and how I coach. And so whether the players understood or not, that we were referring to the values and, mm-hmm. and referencing to them, we definitely like use them in our coaching and in tough moments. Like, that's the values mm-hmm. we carry with us. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I'll be curious to see what you do. I don't know. My right away, my thought is the exercise itself is part of the value, right? It's like the medium is the message thing. It's like, you, by doing that, it doesn't matter what they pick, because you're now, they're going to be the most accountable to whatever they decide. Right. And so
absolutely.
I'm curious to see how you move forward with that. Yeah. Now I want to switch teams, to a team that's not even created yet. So I guess a future opportunity. So we mentioned that you're going to be the 15U provincial team coach offline. Yeah. We talked a little bit about the fact that you have, I mean, I guess locally somewhat of a legend. I'm not even going to say somewhat, he's a legend.
He is.
Stephen Tacky as your assistant coach, which I was like, is he your assistant or you guys co-coaches? And so, you know, I know, you know, Coach Tacky, you know, fairly well, interviewed him on the podcast. I've known him for years. It's like, again, what an opportunity for you. But I think you were mentioning offline that he's seeing that also as an opportunity. So again, I know I'm just saying things, but, you know, question I have for you here is, you know, why did you decide to actually apply for the provincial team job? And I guess, is this really your first step into the wider, I guess, Basketball Manitoba network?
Yeah. First of all, you're right. He's a legend. It's not we can't argue that. Yes. I mean, I love Steve and I barely know him. Like, the few interactions that I had with him, I'm like, this is the guy. Like, that doesn't come better than him. For me, applying to the provincial team was always on the back of my mind. Back in France, I did a little bit of the same system. It wasn't as like short windows, you know, mm-hmm. you select your team, you develop them, compete, and then it's gone. It was more like a long process of selecting athletes at a young age and training them. And then when they reach a certain age, they start competing, but they kind of stay in the same team, the same group. So it's not like U15, U17, it was like U13, 14, 15, 16. Got it. There's every single age so that they can keep competing. So it was a bit different. So I touched that a little bit. So I guess I always had an interest in, I see Basketball Manitoba as the governing body of basketball in Manitoba. Mm-hmm. And so I always had an interest in working with them and being able to work with normally the best players in Manitoba. Mm-hmm. I have a deep desire to one day being on the national team. Mm. And so I've used that also as a way to start building myself at the national level, because we're going to go to the national championship. I'm going to meet like coaches from all around the province and kind of like start building your resume and your network that way. So that was always in the back of my mind to apply. I was extremely busy my first few years. Like, I've coached multiple sports camps over the summer. And so this summer was actually the first summer where I was like, all right, I think I have time. I think I can commit to it. And so I'm very happy to have been selected and to be given this chance.
So did you apply with Steve as your assistant coach already?
No, so I applied alone, and I was thinking about applying with Steve, but again, I didn't know him that well. And so I was like, I mean, I told him, so it's not a shot at him, but I told him like he's pretty slow at answering messages. So I was like, how long is it gonna take if I text him and I'm like, hey, would you consider applying with me? Then I was like, I don't know how this is gonna go. So I decided to apply alone, and I told during the interview that Steve Tacky would be my first choice, like, to coach with, and before I had a chance to say that, they offered me to have Steve Tacky in my staff, and I was like, yeah, like that sounds perfect.
Nice.
So yeah.
Awesome. Who else is on the staff? Do you have an assistant?
No, No, it's just the two of us.
Okay.
Like we have a condensed format this year, so there's like limited window of competition and budget, and so we it's only the two of us. But as you said, when you see his name on the resume, you're like, all right, is he the head coach? Is he associated coach? Head coach? Like, and honestly, it's probably gonna end up like that. I mean, like I'm excited to work with an assistant coach who is like fully devoted, like to being an assistant coach and the best assistant coach. And I think he's excited to be an assistant coach working with a head coach, fully devoted to be the head coach, because in his school, he's like, you know, he's doing almost everything, right?
Yeah.
He does have assistant coaches, but I'm not working for him. And so,
no.
And same for me, I have four assistant coaches that are amazing, but they're not working for me. They have their job and they're helping the team. Mm-hmm. And so for us, we kind of like found ourselves, you know, on this path of like, hey, I kind of want to see what it's like to have like a knowledgeable assistant coach who is like, you don't need to tell him anything. He's going to do it by himself.
Yeah.
And he was kind of like, I want to see how it looks like to be assistant coach to a head coach who has the capacity to not need like everything from me. Like,
yes.
I'm not mentoring him. I'm working with him. And so I think we're a great match and we're both very excited to work with each other. And just like the tryouts are next week. And so we not like this last few days, we've been talking a lot about what we want to do. And I think we're very excited to work with each other.
Nice. Tryouts. Yeah. So this, would this be your first, I guess this is your first venture into the larger, I think you've done some camps with Basketball Manitoba before, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. This year I did
this year.
The university spring camp. I was also part of the selection committee for the provincial team for 2 years. So I've been there. I've seen how it's run. I've an idea of like the tryouts. I would say it's still my first time like being actively part of it.
Yes. Yeah. People. Well, this is where people are like, who's this PR guy? Like people who don't know you, right? You're not like, yeah, no, that's cool. What, I mean, we brought up the new competition format a few times. I'm curious, what does it look like? How many trips do you go on before you actually go to nationals? How often are you practicing?
So I don't know what was before, so I can only tell you what is now. And hopefully you can compare it to what you know. We only go on one trip. We're going to Regina beginning of July. And hopefully playing 2 to 3 games over there. We're trying to have Alberta coming and kind of like doing a 3-team tournament. We have 30 official practice time. Between the beginning of June and the end of July. And then we're going to Sherbrooke, Quebec for the national championship the first week of August.
Okay.
So it's 2 months, 30 practices, three official games, up to 3 official games. We're going to try to get a few scrimmages in there.
Of course.
And then the national championship. So a very short window to develop and create a team from the scratch, because these athletes are not playing with each other. So
for sure. I guess the other side of things with Manitoba is, you know, they all know each other. So that's the other thing.
And they've been
playing against each other. And I'm sure some of the players will come from the same club as well. So I think that's the other side of it. Now, the thing is you're going to want to, you know, you're building a new team. And so that takes time. And so, it'll be interesting to see how your experience is. I mean, it's probably better that you don't have the old way as a reference.
Yeah.
You're like, this is what it is. And, you know, you can plan and your expectation is very focused on what is rather than what was. It'll be interesting. So I kind of, we're getting close to the end here. So you'd mentioned already the funniest basketball story. I do ask that question, and I won't ask it again unless you have another one and that you want to share. Okay, so if you do, you know, great. Just be like, hey, I actually do want to share one. But I do want to know what your most memorable basketball story or moment is throughout your career.
Yeah, obviously, there's been a lot of great moments and a lot of great time with players and coaches and all of the good stuff. But I think the one that I would like to say is winning our first championship last year, because a lot of people know that we won last year, the MCAC, so the Manitoba Conference. A lot of people know that it had been 19 years since we won the MCAC. So that was like an like a big moment for that. But not a lot of people know what happened the week leading to the championship. So last year was still considered COVID, right? COVID season. And so Providence is playing in three different leagues, one in Manitoba, the MCSC, the NIAC and the NCCA Division 2 in the US. And so because of COVID, we were not able to travel during the regular season in the US. And so we played every single games in Manitoba against San Boniface and CMU. And like mid-January, they opened up the border, or at least they made it a little bit easier for us to travel. And so we decided to go down to Wisconsin for our regional tournaments. And so we go there with the understanding that we're going to need to get COVID tests. And on the way back at the border, like we all need to be clean to be able to cross back. And that's the week before the MCAC championship.
Okay.
I think you can sense where this is going. So we go down to Wisconsin, we play in the regional tournaments, and it's over like Thursday to Sunday. And so we are on the way back to Manitoba on Saturday, and we stop in Minneapolis. And everybody, like, it was the time where everybody received like the results of the test. And I go to bed, like, whatever, and wake up in the morning, and I have a lot of messages on my phone, and a lot of messages from my players, like most of them saying I'm negative, we good to go, and two saying I'm positive. And you know, like you just woke up and you start processing what that means, like they can't cross back the Canadian border. Yeah, I mean, they could have crossed, but like the isolation and it would have been like somehow crazy. So we meet as a coaching staff, we meet with the players, and we realized two of them are positive, and they can't come back in Manitoba. And I decide to stay with them. I'm like, I'm not leaving you in the States behind by your own. And even if I was, like, how are you going to survive? You're supposed to stay in your room. So we book a hotel room like close to the border, and I say goodbye to the rest of the team, goodbye to the women's team, goodbye to Joel, and like see you whenever we see you. And so we stayed in the hotel, and that's it. Like, we put them both into the same room because they're like, okay, you have the same thing. Both of them, zero symptoms. You know, it's the one COVID, you know, where nobody's sick, everybody's in good shape, but the papers say that they're not good to go. And for the funny story, just to put one here, I won't give the name, but like everybody who knows my team will know who they are, but they were as opposite as it gets from each other, like personality wise, belief wise, like the guys, like not a good match, but at the same time, a good test of character for both of them. And so we are like hoping that, you know, we got tested on the Friday, I think. So like, we're making some calculation, and like, all right, like, hopefully we're going to get negative very soon, and we can go. And I'm like, hopefully I'm not going to get COVID because of them. And, you know, so I'm taking every precaution that I can when I give them food and everything. Anyway, we stayed at the hotel from Sunday to Thursday.
Wow.
Every day we go to the University of North Dakota to get tested, and every day they're still positive, and I'm still negative every single day. And so my players back home are practicing and getting ready for a championship without me. and we were the second seed, so we had to go through the semifinal against USB to face CMU if we won in the final. And so I'm calling my assistant coaches, I'm letting them run things, and I mean, it's a test of trust for me, because I you know, it's I'm the head coach, and I'm like, I'm not the one prepping for a championship. And every day we're praying and hoping that we're gonna get like the result, and we don't, and we are getting like dangerously close to the day of the semifinal, which is Thursday. And Thursday morning, we go get tested, and the plan was, if one or both of them are still positive, then someone is going to come to hang out with them, and I'm going to go back to Canada to coach the semifinal.
Yeah.
And so there's the dad of one of the players getting ready. He's in his car. He's waiting for the phone call. And we go get tested, and his son is negative. So, like, super happy and everything. But the other one has an inconclusive test.
Wow.
And so we're like, what does it mean? And she's like, well, we were not able to establish the results. So I'm like, you know, I'm like, in my head, I'm trying to process. I'm like, I'm playing a semifinal tonight.
Yeah.
Like it's just very, like, very blurry. And we did, I think, 5 to 6 tests on him, like, in 30 minutes. Like, we just, like, shoveled, like, this stick in his nose and just, like, went
again,
for him.
Again,
and
I was
like,
again.
We're going to do it until we get a negative one. And inconclusive. And we're like, what does it mean? How is it inconclusive, like, 3 times in a row? And then he finally gets one. And the doctor even make a joke. Like, this guy had, like, you know, he was nervous. He was shaking. I was trying to, like, calm him down. And the doctor, and it's like, so what do you need to go back in Canada? I need to be negative. Oh, I'm sorry, it's positive. And the kid, like, almost start bawling. And the doctor is like, no, I'm joking. You're negative. You get to go.
Yeah.
And like,
wow.
He's looking at me, and he just can't believe it. So we go back to the hotel. I'm calling everybody. I'm like, we're coming back. We hit the road, and I arrived to Providence maybe at 4 p.m. The final was like 2 or 3 hours later. I mean, the semifinal. We show up for the semifinal. I feel unprepared. My two guys are unprepared. The team, it's weird. Like, they're just happy to see us. We go through a challenging semifinal against USB. Like, they almost pull up a win against us. When we had win every game but one against them during the regular season, we finally win the semifinal. Now we have one day to get ready for the final. And CMU had won every single game except one that we won against them late in the season. So we know they're a good team. We know it's going to be challenging. And we didn't play a great semifinal. Like we were not, like, I mean, I haven't talked to my team for a week. Like, when we're out of sync, like things are not going well. So I'm like, we're going to get hammered down in the final. Like, it's going to be horrible. And then just everything clicks. You get into the semifinal. We're hosting in a new facility in Neverville. Like, you know, and it clicks. Everything clicks on the court. My players play their best basketball that I've ever seen. Everything is perfect. From the defensive end to the offensive to the executions of our plays to, like, the shooting accuracy to everything clicks, the energy and everything. And we win our first championship after, like, a very much wide week that
wow.
didn't prepare us. So lots of people know we won, but not a lot of people actually know the full story of how we didn't prepare for that first championship. And so the feeling, I mean, we won this year and it was great, but the feeling last year to win and accomplish that after such a dramatic week and season as a whole was just, like, an amazing feeling.
Wow. That I mean, and then, like, yeah, there's so much. I mean, it's hard to, if you don't have an experience like that, it's very hard to remember. A lot of people have forgotten how it was during the COVID times. And there's an additional pressure, like, obviously, of the testing and all this stuff like that. And how serious it is, or how you're able to do what you're not able to do. Like, you know, I can't go into the country. So all those things kind of looming over the game. And then for you to squeak out the win in against, you know, Save Money Fast, and then move on to actually beat CMU, right? I mean, that's super memorable for sure. And I'm sure the players are like, that's something that you guys probably talk about. Remember that time when we almost didn't get over the border?
Yeah, well, that player, so one of them is not in my team anymore. Okay. But the other one is, and, like, he talks about it all the time. It's like,
sure,
man, I was stuck in this hotel room with the other guy, and it was crazy. And then we go on and we win a championship. And so that's a really sweet memory for a lot of us. Yeah,
absolutely. Oh, that's a great one. Okay, I have one last question for you. You know, I always ask for some advice. The advice that I'm going to ask you is slightly different. So typically with a coach, it's like, you know what, you're standing in front of a room of people, like, say, provincial team, kids, or you're giving a speech of some kind, and a player, you know, someone says, hey, you know, can I ask a question? And they want to know some advice on how they can become a coach. Yeah. But I want to add to that. I want to know, you know, adding to it, maybe the question I actually want to ask you is, What is some advice for someone who is new to an experience, whether it be basketball, like you're when you're 15, but more so to a community, to a city, to a country, and they want to meet new people, but they also want to, you know, essentially, you know, do what you've done. So they want to establish themselves in the community. They want to be able to, you know, coach or do the thing that they're passionate about in a new community. Because again, there's a lot of people out there, whether it be a student who goes to a new school, someone who goes to a new team, someone who just goes to a different province, a different city, a different, there's, you know, there's often people who are stuck in these new environments and they feel a little out of sorts. And so I know you have a lot of experience with that coming and taking a risk. So again, very open-ended question here. I think you kind of know where I'm going here, yeah. But I'm very curious to see what your advice would be to someone who is experiencing something similar to your experience in a new environment that really, really wants to have success.
That's a difficult question because mm-hmm. I haven't mastered it. and I learned along the way. I think is finding the right people to surround yourself. And so what I mean by that is don't try to be friend with everybody. Like don't try, you know, to go see everybody, but talk to a lot of people. And once you find people, I'm a huge believer that, you know, I like when people put like something into words for me. Like I like reusing what people say because mm-hmm, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, so I heard someone say one time, leaders remove confusion. And clarity is kindness. And so I kind of mix these two things is like remove confusion of you, what you're trying to do. Like, hey, I'm new here. I'm trying to like make friends. I'm trying to like build my network and just mm-hmm. clearly communicate what you want to do and what you're trying to do. Right. Hey, I'm trying to learn like to be a good coach or, hey, I'm new in this school. Like, can we have lunch? And just like, you know, I love to get to know like someone new and everything like, mm-hmm. like be clear in your intention, like remove confusion, give clarity in what you're trying to do. And don't just be like, you know, trying to make it happen with like, people don't know what they don't know. They might not know you mm-hmm. new. They might not know that you're looking for friends. They might not know that, you know, you're in need of a mentor. They might not know that, they might not know anything because they don't know what they don't know. So mm-hmm. be use clarity and remove confusion in what you're trying to do. Like, hey, I'm looking again for friends, mm-hmm. for mentoring and everything. And I guess attached to that, I would say there. Like dare to try, dare to apply to the provincial team, dare to go see a youth sports coach and be like, hey, would you sit with me and like chat about like your experience, dare to go like see this guy that you want to be friend with, dare like, you know, dare to mm-hmm. do things, dare to move to Canada and mm-hmm. and find a job here, like just like, you know, just go get it. And yeah, I don't know if it's a good advice. I don't know if that's going to help anybody. But that's kind of what comes to mind when I think about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, I mean, again, it's good advice. Like, I think, you know, and you know this, you've said it in so many ways. It's like, you know, we hear a piece of advice from one person and then we hear a piece of this and we, you know, everyone's going to kind of formulate how they view the world and how formulate their own worldview. So I think the advice you're giving is going to, you know, be relevant for somebody. Right. And yeah. Somebody who might be experiencing something like you, like the first thing you said there is like, hey, don't just, you know, try to be friends with everyone, but talk to people. You know, I think that's just that little piece of advice right there is, you know, a good starting point for someone, because again, you're in the most extreme situation, like new country, new everything. And you're by yourself, like you're not even with, you know, so I think that's advice you give there is big. And, you know, I think, you know, I know we often find ourselves in new positions all the time. And so just having that extreme perspective that you're bringing to being in an absolutely, you know, new position, definitely help people for sure. I think that's all we really got, unless you thought of that funny story that you told. Honestly, no. Your most memorable story was also somewhat of a funny story.
It really was. There's one thing that I would like to say though, and it's kind Absolutely. Of a shout out to Graham Bogner, because he put into words a feeling that I had for a long time when you talk about how you approach his basketball and how he approaches every team he plays for as something special. And it's like this one thing, you know, it's his own NBA. Like he made it to college. It was the NBA for him. And he knew that it wasn't the NBA, but he dared to dream about it, right? And so I feel the same way about coaching, and I feel the same way about coaching at Providence. For me, it's like the best next thing. And it's not like I don't know that there's no, like, there's higher level and there's Division I. Like, I'm not, you know, oblivious to the truth, but I'm like, this is where I am. Why would I not make it the most special thing that I can, like, once I'm here? And so I just want to give him a shout out for putting into words how I was feeling. I reached out to him and told him, but I also want to, like, say that to players and coaches and reffing, like make it something special, make it your best, because it could be like that. You don't need to play at the highest level. You don't need to sign a Division I contract. You don't need to be coaching the NBA. You don't need to be reffing the NBA for that to be something great. You can make it great where you're at. And Graham make it, like, I was listening to him and I was like, man, this is it. Like this is how I was feeling inside. He just, like, put it into words, and I reached out to him and I was like, man, I have to thank you, because this is exactly how I feel. And I think that a lot of players could be so much better, or like so much greater, not necessarily just in their skill, but in what they carry with them, what they do, if they just embraced what they have and just make it the best next thing. And I didn't know if that was gonna come out, so I'm forcing it into the end of the discussion, but I like, this is how I feel about basketball. I mean, you can see behind me this championship bowl. I'm like, this is just the MCAC. I know it's a small league. I know, like, a lot of people don't even know that the MCAC exists. It doesn't matter. Like, this is where I coach. This is my NBA for now. And if one day I make it to the U Sport, or one day I make it to the NBA, then that would be my NBA. But right now, Providence University, the college basketball level, is my NBA. And I dare to dream about it, right? I dare to dream that this is the best next thing. And so I would love to see players, coaches, everybody just embracing that, instead of being, like, kind of you know, gray and sad about where they're at. Like, just embrace it and make it the best thing that you can.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that advice, and shout out to my good friend Graham. That always rings true to me as well. It's a great reminder of kind of to maximize yourself in whatever you're doing, right? That's the lesson he gives out, for sure. So I appreciate you, Pierre, and good luck this summer with the provincial team. I'm sure it's going to be another great experience for you. And again, as we talked, working with Coach Tacky, that's going to be cool. Yeah. And then traveling a little bit, with the group of guys, and just good luck. I mean, I think, obviously, like I said, we started the podcast, I knew nothing about you. You know, you shared your story, and you're part of this community for the time being. Again, I don't know if, you know, eventually you said you have some greater goals that would likely take you outside this community, but for now, you're part of this Manitoba basketball community. So it was really great to talk with you and hear your story, and I just wish you good luck.
Yeah, thank you, Darcy. It was a real pleasure for me, and an honor to be on this podcast.
Awesome. All right, take care, Pierre.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Please like, subscribe, follow, and share this series, and reach out to us with your comments on the show. Thanks again for joining us.